be head out now.
I wish I knew how.
Your eyes are like starlight now. Take your hat. Your hair looks
good. I ought to say no. Welcome back to True Crime Brewery's 12 Beers of Christmas. This is episode number 4, where Dick will be reviewing a beer, and we're going to go over the Ashland tragedy from 1881.
Yeah, this is a long time ago, isn't it?
This is our oldest one that we're going to cover, yeah, but yeah. It's fascinating.
I mean, this is, what, 130-some years ago?
Yeah, it's old.
Okay.
Yep.
And we can see the differences in the approach to justice.
Oh, just really fascinating with the whole mob mentality is what really... But let me give a little overview of what happened.
You do that. We'll do the beer. We'll go sit down.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the Ashland tragedy, Robert and Fanny Gibbons and Emma Carrico were staying together at the Gibbons home in Ashland. And they were hacked to death with axes on the night of December 23rd, 1881. Afterwards, the murderers set the house on fire. Emma's mother next door saw the flames and sounded an alarm, and then neighbors found the three victims inside. So George Ellis, a bricklayer, confessed to the crime, and he implicated some fellow workers. And just some crazy stuff happened afterward that we'll get into.
No kidding.
But let me do a 5-star review in the beer, and then we can do that, because I'm anxious to get into this one.
All right.
Okay, so the 5-star review. F yes, this is a good podcast.
F yes.
By Joke Frog.
Okay, I like it already.
Yeah. I enjoy the hell out of this podcast. I found it while searching for podcasts on the staircase, one of the most interesting cases ever, in my opinion, and loved that they split it up and covered so much of it. And covered it objectively. I've read that people think this is a ripoff of True Crime Garage, another show I love, but it's so incredibly different. Delivery, analysis, and stories are different. So what? Dick likes beer and true crime? So do I. Does that mean I rip off True Crime Garage and True Crime Brewery every time I down a few and talk true crime with my murdering friends? I like this person. Keep up the good work, Dick and Jill. I'm almost caught up, so I'm going to miss the binge. Really cool review.
Nice review.
Nicely written. So, Joke Frog, welcome to the brewery, and thank you very much.
It's a well-received review.
Yes.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And what beer do we have?
The beer we have for number 4 of the 12 Beers of Christmas is St. Arnold Christmas Ale from St. Arnold Brewing Company in Houston. Now, this particular beer is an old ale, which has a full malted body, dark amber to very dark brown color. It's malty, fruity, and usually some degree of alcohol. This particular one is a reddish brown color with a medium head, sweet malt aroma, some spice. The taste followed the nose, malty, little spice, little cinnamon. Medium-bodied, nice drinking beer.
Okay, let's open it up. Dickie, I'm ready to go to the quiet end.
All right, let's take these beers down there and have a couple.
Okay.
It's the same Santa down there.
Oh, department store Santa.
Yeah.
What was his name?
I think it was Mike.
Mike.
But...
Mike Ehrmantraut?
We're
that
supposed
it?
To call him Santa.
Oh, okay.
But he looks like he's had a tough day.
Sure, I'm sure it's exhausting.
Yeah.
Having the kids sit on your lap all day, tell you what they want for Christmas.
Right.
Tugging on the beard to see if it's real. But Mike's beard does look real.
It does.
Yeah.
He looks like a real Santa.
I'm hoping tonight he'll give me a candy cane.
Well, maybe if you're a good girl.
I'll try.
So let's go sit next to Mike and do our beer review and
talk about the Ashland tragedy.
Right.
And this is our oldest crime ever from 1881.
Yeah, this is an oldie.
Yeah. So George Ellis, a bricklayer, was the one that confessed to the crime of killing these three young people. And he implicated some fellow workers, William Neal and Ellis Craft. So the three were taken to the Katzlitzburg jail. They were removed to avoid a lynch mob, and they were returned for trial on January 16th. So Ellis was tried on May 30th. He was convicted and given a life term. But the interesting thing is that a mob removed him from the jail that night and lynched him in Ashland. So this is some quick justice. But Kraft and Neal were found guilty in separate trials in Grayson, Kentucky. And Kraft was hanged in 1883, while Neal wasn't hanged until 1885. But a little bit about these victims, because these were some nice young people. It's really a horrible crime.
It is. I mean, it looks like justice was fairly swift.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't know if it was correct. But
right.
Yeah. So Fanny Gibbons, one of the kids that was killed, she was part of the well-known Gibbons family in the area. She was called a handsome girl with a cheerful disposition and winning manners and many friends. Now, there was also some talk that she was kind of physically developed beyond her 14 years, and she'd already learned what it takes to get men to turn their heads, so she had that power at a young age. And she was a neighborhood favorite with a magnetic personality, and she had some really good looks, I guess. And being outgoing and cheerful didn't hurt, having lots of friends. And what we know now is that she also had some not-so-welcome admirers, I guess.
Really?
Yeah. Well,
so people with,
whoever raped and killed her.
Darker deeds.
Yes. So Robert Gibbons was Fanny's brother. And what was interesting about Robert was that he'd lost a leg some years before in an awful event when he'd accidentally fallen in front of and under an empty car that was being pushed along a track by some employees of the Norton Ironworks.
Ew.
Yeah. And Emma Carrico, she was their neighbor, better known as Emma Thomas, and she was also a well-developed, fine-looking girl who was loved by all who knew her, said in her obituary. So Dick and I, we read this little short story on the topic. It was called Did Christ Die for Sinners Weep? The story of the first legal hanging in Carter County about this case. And it was a pretty good read.
It certainly was.
I found it interesting.
Very entertaining.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about what you thought.
Well, so these bodies were found.
Yes.
Dead, obviously.
Yeah, and the guys had set a fire to try and cover it up.
There was a fire to cover it up, and the authorities determined that the girls had been sexually assaulted. So 2 days after the fact, there was overflow crowd turning out for their services at Methodist Episcopal Church.
So they had one service for all three kids?
They had a service for all three kids.
Okay.
And they were all buried in a common grave at Ashland County Cemetery. So the afternoon of the 26th, the acting mayor called a meeting to raise money for a reward to hire detectives to find the murderers. So I guess back in the day, they didn't have police forces, or if they did, they weren't equipped to handle murders, so they had to hire out and find someone.
That was fascinating, yeah.
Yeah, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So they raised over $1,000 in a few days. Private detectives came from the surrounding states to do this. Deputy U.S. Marshal Heflin of Marysville, Tennessee, had the backing of the townsfolk because he had some official authority. But it was another detective, J.B. Norris from Ohio, who jumped off with the first theory. The killer, according to Norris, was John Gibbons, the father.
Now, just to throw in there that the father was away working quite a bit. He wasn't home a lot.
Yeah, he wasn't home much at all.
Yeah.
He worked distances away and showed up from time to time.
And he was able to actually, and he ended up proving that he wasn't there that night.
Right. Even though there was little evidence to substantiate the charge, one of the rape victims was his own daughter, but they overlooked all that.
Mm-hmm.
So they put up on the presumption of guilt because Norris, the detective, had fingered him.
Yeah. And then what, the detective actually left town humiliated? Is that the one?
Yeah, that's the one, because it was found out that there was no way that Gibbons could have been the perpetrator because he wasn't in the area at the time.
Right.
So this detective had to leave in disgrace because he fingered him and it wasn't even close to the actual perpetrator.
Well, I think these guys just came in to make some money working on the case, and I don't know what their qualifications were at all.
No, they were basically bounty hunter type of people. They were looking for the money.
Yeah, so they really didn't have a suspect until a few days later, a man walked into the Ashland General store, and he was buying a cigar.
Now, yes, this is a great story.
Yeah. Mr. Powell, who owned the store, waited on him, and he kind of knew him. He didn't really know his name, but he knew that he was kind of a regular customer. And he introduced himself. He said, "I'm George Ellis." And then making conversation, Powell said, "Well, now that old man Gibbons is in the clear, I wonder who's going to, who it's going to fall on now." Talking about the blame for the murders, of course.
Yeah, and this guy got really shaky.
He did.
Holy cow.
He was clearly startled. He evaded the friendly gaze, and he turned pale. Powell said his hands were, visually, you could tell that they were trembling. And after regaining some control, he blurted out that he had a clue who it might be.
Wow.
Yeah.
Big break.
And then he murmured something about state's evidence, and then he abruptly walked out. So that was really weird.
Yeah, no kidding.
And then as Ellis began walking, it's like everyone was staring at him with accusing eyes, he felt like. And did they know? He asked himself over and over. So after walking the streets for hours, Ellis eventually found his way to the hotel room of Marshall Heflin. And Marshall Heflin invited him in, and George Ellis introduced himself. And he said that he lived near the Gibbons home, and he might know something about the killings. So after being seated, Ellis asked Heflin if he would be so kind as to explain to him the legal meaning of state's evidence. So I don't know how he got this into his head.
Yeah, what is that?
But he had that idea. Well, it's anyone guilty of a crime can inform on others. So if you turn state's evidence, which I'm sure we've heard that on television shows.
We have.
Then you're testifying against someone else.
So you can testify without worrying about repercussions.
Well, no, you still could give a lesser sentence. It doesn't put you in the clear.
Yeah.
But it can kind of reduce the trouble that you're in, I guess. So with that explanation, Ellis seemed happy with that, and he decided to relieve his conscience by making a statement. So Heflin was a pretty skilled interrogator, and he interrogated Ellis. But Ellis gave different versions of the crime. But mainly, he said that a few evenings before the 24th of December, that he met Kraft and that he was going to see Fanny Gibbons and take her some black candy, and that Kraft had told him that he was going to have intercourse with Fanny, and that he wanted Ellis to come along. So that was weird.
It's kind of weird.
Yeah.
To watch or what?
No, I think to participate. I guess it turns out it would have been a forceful thing. So about midnight of the night they were killed, Ellis said that Kraft, Neal, and himself went to the house, and that Kraft raised the window with an old axe and stepped into the house, that Neal followed, and that he came up behind. So he was kind of minimizing his participation.
Well, of course.
But he said the boy, Robbie, was aroused when they went in, and so they told the boy to be still. And then Kraft went to the bed where the girls were sleeping and began to, and I quote, take improper liberties with them. They said that Robbie then said, "You better get away from there." And that's when Kraft hit Robbie on the head with the axe and killed him.
Jeez.
Robbie, I guess, fell 6 feet off the bed to under the stairs. I don't know how it was positioned. But they killed the boy, and then the girls screamed, and he basically said that Neal and Kraft raped the girls, but he helped by holding them down. And then they ended up killing the girls and lit the place on fire to cover up the evidence.
Okay.
So, that was his basic story, although it changed quite a bit from time to time.
Right. I understand. They went to trial.
Well, yeah, they went to trial separately. But Ellis made several more confessions in the meantime, and Kraft and Neal were arrested right away. So the news of Ellis's confession wasn't released to the public, but word spread that the three men were arrested and jailed. And that's when this whole mob mentality kicked in. So I guess they were trying to get the guys away to a different place to keep them because they didn't feel like they were safe in that jail.
Yeah.
Where the crime happened, right?
As it turned out, they weren't safe in that jail.
No. So one of them, I think it was Ellis, who was grabbed by the mob and hung from a tree. He was lynched, right?
Right.
Yeah. And then the other guys went on trial, and they both ended up getting hung as well. But the thing was, there was no evidence that these two guys had anything to do with it.
No.
No.
I mean, other than the rantings of Lynch.
Of Ellis.
Or Ellis, excuse me.
Yeah.
Other than his rantings, which changed.
It did.
I mean, that's how they implicated the other two guys. Well, but that was enough for the mobs.
Right, right. Well, there were several reliable witnesses that came forward to try and prove that Neil was innocent. Mrs. Neil, his wife, was with him crying at the table. And it was on February 6th of 1882, so not that far after. What's that, like 2 months later, not even?
Just a short time.
Yeah, there was only 17 minutes of deliberation, and the jury found him guilty. So this was February 6th, they found him guilty, and he was hanged on February 14th. So this is swift justice.
This is swift.
There's no hanging out on death row.
No appeals or anything. Boom.
No. Well, the other guy did have some appeals, but, you know, not like today's lengthy appeals.
No.
Because Kraft and Neil had won a new trial, but in the long run, they were both hung.
So,
but it was just a really interesting...
One guy's lynched and the other two are hung after being found guilty.
Yes. Yep.
Huh.
Yep. Actually, they were hung from a sycamore tree that stood only about 100 yards from the burned house where the kids had been killed. And on that same tree, the same limb that he had been hung from, there was a swing that the neighborhood children had played on. And then they would allow the body to hang for a day just for people to see. And upwards of 3,000 people came to see the hangings. So it was an event. So people really got angry and had this mob mentality.
We've read about that. I mean, that's just barbaric stuff, but geez.
But you know what really got to me about this mob was that 20 men and boys from the mob took possession of a ferry boat because they were trying to take the guys by boat to a different county. And as the ferry boat approached the steamer, they started shooting their pistols. What happened was they fired round after round, and hundreds of rounds ended up being fired. Now, it's just crazy because they found a target on the shore of the bank of the river and on the streets of the houses of Ashland. So killed were Colonel L.W. Reppert, an H. Citizen, who'd been trying to keep the mob from boarding the ferry. Also a young father, Willie Surrey.
So these people were killed by gunfire
from the mob
directed at something.
The mob was trying to shoot the guys who were going to trial.
Yeah.
Instead of letting justice take its... Yeah. So it ended up about, I think, a dozen people were killed out of this.
Jeez.
Yeah. So that kind of goes against the mob mentality, I would think.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, the mob was trying to... The transfer of the prisoners.
Yeah, but
so I guess the others were kind of collateral damage.
Well, I guess, but these were innocent people, so that doesn't make any sense to do that.
None at all.
No. It's just crazy. So, one more interesting thing I want to say. The truth of what happened that night will never be known, and up until the time of the brutal murder, all three of the accused men had lived these normal lives. So no hint in their background to suggest that they had in this savagery, this, you know, raping and murdering. And the odds that all three would just, you know, have this repressed side that comes out that night is really remote. Do you agree with that?
I would, yeah. But it didn't satisfy the mob.
No, and the juries as well. Several juries voted the same way, guilty as charged. And could they all be wrong? They could be, right?
Sure.
Yeah. But one of the detectives who worked on the case, but was not called to testify, he made this really interesting observation, I thought. And he said, how would Ellis, Kraft, and Neil have known the children were alone that night? Only three people knew that the children were alone, and that was Mrs. Gibbons, her son Sterling, and Mrs. Thomas. So given that logic, it would seem that at least one of them would have had to be involved or spoken to them.
It certainly would.
In order for them to... plan this and go and do this. But after all said and done, about a dozen people died, and a similar number were wounded, and many lives were forever upended, not just because of the crime, but because of what happened after the crime.
Well, I can imagine.
And this case is still debated, and this story was written, and I hadn't heard of it before, but I thought it was worth covering. I thought it was interesting.
No, it's a fascinating story, and we've only kind of touched the surface of it because we're trying to limit the amount of time we're doing these things.
Well, you're doing 12 podcasts in 12 days. You right. really have to limit your time because we have other things.
We could almost do a whole big episode on this. This is a fascinating thing. And maybe we will at some point in the future.
I think we might on a few of these. These crimes, we're just touching on them, and there are a few that are probably worth the full episode eventually. Yeah. No, and this is probably one of them.
This probably is, because there's a lot more stuff that we haven't talked about due to time constraints.
Right, right.
So.
So, yeah, we'll keep it in our back pocket.
We will.
Okay.
And you might hear from us again.
Yes.
About this.
Yes, you might.
Okay.
Okay, so from Dick and Mike and I, happy holidays, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay.
All right.
Next
bye-bye.
Time.
Yep.
Bye.
No cabs to be had out now.
I wish I knew.
Your eyes are like starlight.